Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems for and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It is Friday, June 11th, 2004, 10:04 a.m. on the Central Coast of California, and it's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name is Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP or its board, the Pataphysical Broadcasting Foundation. Today on Geek Speak, we take your calls. Radio tech support right after the Geek News. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or, of course, you can get in our queue right now by going to geekspeak.org with your web browser. Click on The Geeks and then click on Send a Message to fill out our web form, which we use to reduce spam. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air and with me are geeks. Sean Cleveland, Technical Marketing Communications Manager for Transmeta. John Tracy, owner and operator of FeltonGames.com. And Miles Elam, programmer and student of American Literature. A special note, Miles is currently unemployed and looking for work. He is a Java programmer with expertise in XML. And as an added benefit, Miles can form a sentence and spell. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Thank you, Lyle.
I'm here to help, man.
Morning. And he doesn't have a ring on his finger, which is the only geek here who doesn't.
That's right. He's also single.
It's going to be one of those days.
It's only because we love you.
And because you just waltzed in the door at the last minute. And, Miles, since you just waltzed in the door at the last minute, got any news for us, my man?
As a matter of fact, I do. There are a couple of Internet Explorer exploits out that people should know about. First off, one of them is Internet Explorer, one of them is just Windows. One of them is known as the Corgo virus. And this is one that's similar to the Sasser worm in that you don't have to actually go to a website or run a program or check email to have it infect your system. You simply have to be connected to the net.
And have a public IP address.
Right. This is something that is supposed to be fixed in Service Pack 2 of XP. However, there's no fixes that I'm aware of yet for the older versions of the operating system. So it's something people should be worried about. And there is a security patch, an immediate security patch that's available from windowsupdate.microsoft.com. People should get it.
Okay, so you open your web browser and go to windowsupdate.microsoft.com and update everything you possibly can. And it takes a long time, so do it some evening while you're doing other things around the house.
Well, it takes a long time if you
have slow dial-up.
Right.
All right. Thank you, Miles. John, we'll go right to you, sir.
For those of you looking to buy a new Apple computer, the low-end Mac just got a speed boost up to 1.25 gigahertz.
Is this the iMacs?
No, this is the G5s, the low-end G5s.
Okay, towers.
Yeah, and they all have dual processors now. And of significant note is the upper-end ones, the 2.5 dual gigahertz, the dual 2.5 gigahertz processors are now liquid-cooled. He's taking my picture while I'm doing this. It's so distracting.
That's okay. Liquid-cooled,
they're liquid-cooled. They're using a company called Coolidge, which doesn't really reveal exactly how they do it. They use things called nanotubes. Microtubes, which are very, very small pipes, basically, that they run a fluid through. And they have a little
so there's a lot of surface area from the liquid to the material.
Right. Uh-huh. And they have a lot of they have a electrokinetic pump, which uses a piece of glass that
that vibrates, kind of.
That vibrates. Basically, it exchanges the heat, the extra electrons, the temperature difference between the glass and the water causes it to move, basically,
okay.
Which is the pump. So there's no moving parts other than that piece of glass, and there's very little friction because it's sitting in the coolant.
So basically, it's a really good way of making thermodynamics actually move the fluid through the system.
Exactly. Yeah. They're using the existing energy and the heat to create the pumping.
That makes so much sense.
Oh, yeah, it's totally cool.
And this is going to be. These are in the most recent towers.
These are in the new
dual G5s,
dual 2.5 gigahertz G5 towers. So naturally, this has got the Mac OS rumors going incredibly about the G5 PowerBook that's supposed to be coming out. That's liquid cooled. So
right, of course,
it's in the rumor stage right now. Sure,
happening.
I'd buy a little liquid cooled G5 PowerBook. So if they ever come out, sure, I'll probably
sure, throw two processors in there and I'm there. Right?
Yeah,
great. Thank you very much, John, for the Mac update, Sean.
AMD had big news this week. They launched a new processor called Semperon.
And what is Semperon?
Semperon is...
Were you responsible for that? You get out of there before that name.
They're all Ron, kind of.
Okay, that's right.
Happening is Celeron is a low-end chip. They followed with their own called Duron. Then they killed Duron. Then they brought Duron back for the Chinese market. And people in the United States want Duron back. But I don't think AMD... Well, I guess we decided to call it Semperon instead.
It sounds like a disease, but okay, go on. Semperon.
It's not Semperon, it's just Semperon.
Semperon.
But okay. It follows off the Latin word semper, which is always. You've heard of Semper Fi, always faithful?
Sure.
Okay, Semper Fidelis.
Semperon, always on.
That's cool.
Used for every day. So this processor seems to be made or based off of the AMD Athlon 64 core without the 64-bit. So, okay. Which is really cool, actually, because that is a very advanced architectural processor architecture. That core has support for high-speed hypertransport, which means there's no Northbridge chip. So everything communicates directly with the processor, including memory. So memory is tied directly to the processor at really high speed. Very good. Nice.
Cool.
And there's two versions of this chip. They're codenamed Paris and Victoria. Looks like Paris will be out first. It's based off 130-nanometer process. And 256 kilobytes of L2 cache, which is kind of small, but this is a budget processor.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to see a slower bus. I think it's still going to be fast. A smaller cache, and not as fast as their desktop chips because they don't want the two to compete.
Great.
And Victoria will be used with the 90-nanometer technology.
So it's kind of top of the line.
That will be out later.
Uh-huh.
But for people who are looking for budget, computer with some still... performance. I think this is something to look out for, definitely.
Great. Thank you very much, Sean. We're going to go right to Miles Elam, sir, unemployed programmer, Java and XML. I'll just keep on touting it. Oh, and as John said, single.
Yes. Anyway.
So if you're a corporation looking to marry somebody.
He's the guy.
So this is the other exploit I was talking about. There were two. And I do have to say I misspoke last time that the bug was only fixed in XP Service Pack 2 and only for the recent operating systems. The last bug is actually fixed for the group to scope to Windows Update. Okay. It's this one that's only fixed in
Service Pack 2
uh-huh. and only for XP, which is there's a new bug scripting exploit in Internet Explorer that is a single click on a malicious website could compromise the system. So what the workaround currently is disable ActiveX for all sites that aren't trusted. In other words, unless you have a system, or unless you have a website that you need to use that has ActiveX inside a firewall or inside a corporate network or the like, just have it turned off.
Okay. Well, that's probably pretty good advice in general. But so basically, this just exploits through ActiveX.
Right.
Okay. So that means that if you didn't go to this website that had this
you actually have to actually
code on
go to
maybe, okay.
Right, you actually have to go to the website.
It's a little safer. Thank you for that. John?
In more Mac news, we've talked a few weeks ago about a flaw in OS X, where if you went to a if you browsed to a site, there was a chance that your computer could be hacked.
Using the help system, the help internet protocol helper, called help. Go on.
Apple has finally, Monday, released a security patch for this. So it's kind of the first big critical OS X flaw that made your system, where they found that your system was actually vulnerable.
And it was open for more than a week?
Yeah. It was open for longer than that.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's kind of long.
That is a long time.
It was, I think, 3 weeks, four
really?
Weeks.
Really? And a couple weeks ago, like after it was announced, they had a security thing that said it was fixing it, and it only partially improved the safety, if you will, of your machine. So now if you go to Mac update.
Right. Now if you go to OS X update.
In OS X, how do you do that?
You go to your system preferences.
Okay.
And you click on software update.
Okay.
And then if it doesn't do it automatically, there's a check now button. You click check now. It'll show you the list of updates.
And you have to be connected to the network.
You have to be connected to the internet.
And if you have a laptop, a great way to do system updates, either Windows or Mac, is to go buy, if you don't have high-speed access at home, to go to a coffee shop that has high-speed access. There are tons of them happening around the place, and a lot of them have great little offerings. So
free access, too. Free access, yeah. You can go, you can get a cup of Java, and you can sit there, and your computer can update itself while you enjoy yourself.
Santa Cruz's very own Cafe Bene, which is downtown across from Atlantis, just opened up free wireless for people. So it kind of opens up everywhere, even traditional coffee shops. So nice.
They're in Felton. They're in Scotts Valley. In fact, someday we hope to post a link up on our website.
Yes, John, I think you should do that.
Because I'm a war driver. I drive around kind of gathering this information on where these free sites are. And it'd be nice to post that.
I think that'd be a great free access. Feature.
Hacker.
I'll get right on it.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, I just got a new wireless router for my home.
And is it open to the public?
Great, I'll be driving
I'm running
by.
60-bit
in Brookdale. Okay.
60-bit encryption, and I'm hiding my SSID, so good luck. So Bluetooth has announced a new version. It's called EDR, Bluetooth Enhanced Data Rate.
And Bluetooth is a personal wireless network.
Correct. Yeah.
So that your handheld
like 10 years
and your
phone
can talk
10 years in the making, and it's finally starting to sell, take off. So this is really good news for Bluetooth, because this new version is significantly faster than version 1.2. So it's got transfer speeds of 2.1 megabits per second, which is 3 times faster than the current Bluetooth. This means that you can transfer a 1 megabyte file in about 4 seconds, whereas before it took about 12. Mm-hmm. So anybody out there want to do the math, you just take the megabits, divide by 8, that's your megabytes.
Now, it still isn't fast enough to have like a webcam at your head and have a computer in your pocket that's recording video from that webcam. I mean, maybe a webcam, but not a full video thing. Okay.
Maybe with some of the new standards like MPEG-4, I don't know what the data rate of that is, but possibly something really low.
Let's quickly talk about Bluetooth success. Sean, you recently bought a Bluetooth phone and your car. You want to talk briefly
I'm sorry, I just have to interject there.
Yeah.
Lyle, embedded cameras in your head don't exist yet.
Oh, darn. Thanks, Miles. Sean, you want to talk about your success with your Bluetooth phone?
What about the wireless, transmission?
I didn't mean embedded.
If it were cellular,
to the side of your head. I mean, come on.
So,
recording your entire life. What's the problem?
But the big news on this is you are getting twice the speed, or more than 3 times the speed, at half the power. So your device will actually last twice as long. Which is really cool because, this stuff is broadcasting all the time. So it is actually using battery life.
Is it compatible with existing Bluetooth?
And it's fully compatible with existing Bluetooth devices.
So that means the new 2.1 stuff will work in your car?
It'll work everywhere. So expect to see devices based on this next year.
Okay.
So I did. I've got the new 2004 Prius, which I think is awesome, and I can't recommend it more highly. Although gas mileage isn't what they claim.
Okay.
But it's still pretty good.
Well, what do you get at?
Very good.
You commute
over
the hill.
I commute the mountains, so I don't get as near as well as I think I should, but maybe about 42 to 45 miles per gallon.
Okay.
And that's my average.
Mm-hmm.
And I just bought a new phone, the Sony Ericsson T616. The car has Bluetooth capability, so when I get in my car, it automatically syncs. My car has my full address phone book in it, so they all come standard with the screen, touch screen, so I can...
The cars.
The car does.
Yeah.
So I never have to pull the phone out of my pocket. So if I'm driving and somebody calls me, I can pick up the phone off my steering wheel by hitting a button, and I just talk
into the car.
I would normally to somebody else in the car, and I hear it through the speakers.
Okay, so they've got that, but they don't have embedded cameras in the head? What's going on?
Yeah.
Thank you, Sean, for that. Miles?
The FCC has settled with Clear Channel with regards to indecency issues on the air, and... The settlement was for $1.75 million and a promise to do better in the future.
We're sorry.
No, except that promise includes firing DJs for the first offense.
Wow.
And, one of the tough parts, though, is that no one has actually said exactly what is considered indecent.
It's whatever the FCC commission feels is indecent. This conversation could be
somebody who calls in at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I am critical of the FCC, mind you. No. We love the FCC here. We love them better than cats.
Miles, please stop.
What you got against cats?
The Broadway musical. Is that all for your ranting about political stuff today?
Basically.
Okay, thank you very much, Miles. John, just a moment. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The Geeks this morning, as you just heard, Miles Elam, prior to that, Sean Cleveland, and now John Tracy with another bit of news.
I'd like to take us all to Mars, but I can't, so I'll tell you about what the Mars rovers are doing up there.
Okay.
Both rovers are about to undergo a major event in their exploration. Opportunity, which was the second one to land, is about to go down a large crater, a large meteor crater called the Endurance Crater. They're going to check for further signs of water, and they're also going to look around and see if the crater is deep enough that it's maybe exposed some rock they haven't seen yet. It's got to go down a 25-degree slope, which is just at the limit of what they designed it to traverse. So at JPL, they've made this giant sand table, tilted it up to a 25-degree angle, and they've got a captive rover that they're using to test it out and see how it's going to perform. They're not sure if they're going to be able to get the rover back out or not once it's gone in. That's why they're doing all this.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to figure out, well, if we can't get it back out, do we still want to send it in anyway? Spirit is about to reach the Columbia Hills, which is a series of mountains that was over 2 kilometers away when it first landed. Since it finished its original mission in its area, they decided to head out for the hills. So for the last 35 days, it's been moving at about 100 to 150 meters a day on average. I mean, you know, there's been technical glitches. But it's been cruising along, and it's now within a few days of getting...
We're talking like a
mountains.
Football field a day kind of thing.
On a good day.
On a good day. That's when the sun's out.
And they've been able to do a lot of great things. Like, they will give 15 minutes of engineering commands. You know, they'll drive it for 15 minutes, and then they'll let it go, and they'll say, okay, go. And it'll drive for a couple hours on its own, just using its autonomous navigation.
Great.
Really cool stuff. It should be said that both rovers have exceeded their original lifespan by a long time. Originally, they said 90 days per rover would be excellent. Currently... Spirit landed in January, and it's on its 154th day right now and going strong. Opportunity is on its 134th day.
Wow.
And one of the problems that we're facing is Mars is about to hit its winter period, which means there's going to be less sunlight. Both rovers are
solar powered.
Yeah, they have batteries, and they're charged by solar power. So what they're thinking about doing is putting them into a deep hibernation mode during the Martian winter. And then when spring comes, seeing if they can wake them back up again. Because they weren't really supposed to last this long. And so if they don't wake up, it's no big loss. Because, wow, we've gotten way more out of them than we expected to. If they do wake up, it'd be pretty darn cool.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Sean, for that. Sean?
Yeah, I got two small, quick stories.
Uh-huh.
People were asking about Service Pack 2 for Windows XP. It looks like the latest build is not likely to be released as...
CD.
Well, RC2. So that is it's the release candidate, basically. So what they do is they specify when a release is not generating as many bugs as the previous, and they say, yeah, we feel pretty good about this. This might be a release candidate. And then they start testing it again, and they find a lot more bugs, and it becomes just, you know.
They make that release candidate available to a larger audience base.
They do.
Like some developers.
Yeah, and for every release candidate, they open it up wider so they can get more feedback. So it looks like that RC2 maybe getting to beta testers by the end of this week.
Wow. So
or possibly next week.
So Service Pack 2 is not released. It's still in beta. It's, well, at least in this release candidate beta stage. And yet there's an exploit that only gets healed by that patch. Is that right, Miles, from your earlier story?
That is the case for a lot of things, actually.
So how do you avoid that exploit?
Buy a Mac.
Well,
you really
Linux
feel?
Doesn't have it either.
All right.
So I've also heard that through the grapevine, I don't know how accurate this can be, but it may be out on July 21st.
Okay.
So that looks like the least shooting for the end of July.
So is that real time or is that Microsoft time?
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Your other story?
And Sony has released a new dual format DVD burner. This one burns DVDs at 12x. That's the plus R, and burns DVD dash R at 8x. So it's the DRU-540A. So it looks like nobody's building 12x burners that do both yet, but this one does. plus R. Plus R is good for data, dash R is good for video.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are Sean Cleveland, John Tracy, and Miles Elam. If you would like to call in with questions or comments about your computers, the time to do it is now. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, 476-2800 in the 831 area code or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can go to geekspeak.org, click on The Geeks, then click on Send a Message to get messages into our email that will actually get past our spam filters. That's how you want to do it. Get in the queue now. Sean, I'm going to go back to you for a news story again, sir, while we're waiting for phone calls. Or I can quiz Miles on acronyms. It's your call.
I'd rather hear your acronyms.
All right. Yeah. Miles, let's see. Let's start with the tried and true that you actually failed once on, ASCII.
American Standards Code Set for Information Interchange.
Okay, what's XML? We hear XML all the time. What's that acronym stand for?
Extensible Markup Language.
Okay. What's the difference between an abbreviation and an acronym, Miles?
An abbreviation is... Well, okay. An acronym is a type of abbreviation.
Okay.
But an abbreviation would be something where you are saying the name of the word that is being shortened, whereas an acronym would be you're actually saying the acronym itself.
An acronym is a word in and of itself.
Well, not necessarily.
Yes.
Sometimes.
That's a dictionary.
I don't know. Miles and I were in this debate earlier. What's very specific about an abbreviation is that even though the word's abbreviated, you say the entire word. That's what you're saying, right?
Right.
So approximate's abbreviated all the time.
Right.
And you actually never say approx, but you just say approximate.
It's like G.I. Joe, Cobra. Cobra is an acronym.
Okay, but G.I. Joe is G.I. Joe.
Cobra is an acronym. It's an
Cobra is an acronym because it's a word.
And it's also known as...
But ANSI is an abbreviation because it's not a word. That's the difference.
No, that's not right. If you said... Go ahead and look it up.
Yeah, I am.
Good, I like the way we have a debate. A little bit of fighting in the air room.
Cobra is also known as an initialization.
I love that you guys are using
as
G.I. Joe.
As is NASA.
And yeah, G.I. Joe is awesome.
What defines a word, then?
Good question. What's your story for your news story, John?
Okay, to break up the monotony.
I wouldn't say that's monotonous. I want to see the boxing gloves on.
Airport Express has been released by Apple. It's a device, AirTunes is the software that's going to run on the Airport Express. And it's an 802.11g wireless transmitter that'll transmit music to any stereo in your house. So basically, you can download all of your iTunes music onto this device, and you can share your music everywhere in your house. So you can have a centralized record collection, basically.
This is interesting because cool. People who are word driving could actually zone in on this and listen to music, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I wonder what the FCC thinks about that.
Yeah, you're at the range of the 802.11g base station, which under the best of circumstances is 100 feet.
Right.
And usually through house walls it can be a little bit less.
So an acronym is a noun, a word formed from the initial letters of a multi-word name.
I'm sorry, did I ever say an acronym is not a word?
Wow.
By the way, ETC, ETC period, etc., is that a word?
No.
Etc. is not a word?
Etc. is a word. ETC is an abbreviation.
Except when you say it, you never say ETC, you say etc.
Sandra from Santa Cruz, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is, we travel a lot by car, and I'm a Mac user, and I wouldn't use anything else. And we've just learned to use a cell phone, but how can we be, is there a way to be connected all the time to, not all the time, but whenever we want our email or to ask a question on the computer, is there a way?
Do you have a laptop?
No, and that's what I was waiting.
Okay. So you're traveling around, you're not with your computer, and you want to check your email and maybe go online for a little bit.
Right.
Okay. That's doable.
Yeah.
I did that all the time when I was on my road trip.
All right, thanks for the call. No, I'm just kidding. John, how do you do it?
All you need is a laptop with a wireless card.
Wireless card.
Wait.
Okay.
Do you want to get a laptop, or do you just want to be able to check your email when you're on the road?
Well, I'd be happy to get a laptop.
Okay, John will give you one. No.
And I wanted to be a Mac. But also, when we go to people's houses, you don't like to use their computer.
Right.
So, go ahead.
Okay, well, one solution, of course, is to get a laptop.
Yeah.
If you buy a laptop, you can buy a Mac laptop. It's a little over $1,000, a little under $1,000, somewhere around there. And
okay.
You could do that.
Get a wireless card, and then you can go up online, and you can, no matter where you go, there's coffee shops. Usually there's like a Starbucks.
Yeah, right.
Or something like that. And there's a company called Surf and Sip that provides a wireless connection to them. And for like $25 a month, you can have wireless connection anywhere you can find a Starbucks.
Which is basically anywhere.
Right. Or you can go to McDonald's. And, they've got a, I think it's... $2 an hour.
And in cool places like the Central Coast, you can find free places all over the place.
Right. Or you can, you know, most coffee shops will have something, and there's sites online. I don't have any of them on the top of my head, but there's sites online that'll tell you, if you're going here, there are these different coffee shops in that area where you can go, you can get your email, you can browse.
But if you're not, now if you don't want to buy a computer, the library is a good place.
Right.
Well, we have done that, but you can't do it while you're moving along in the car.
No, and in fact, this one you wouldn't be able to do while you're moving along in the
in
car.
In fact,
either.
You can't even have a computer in your front seat of your car legally.
In California.
You can.
In California, that's illegal.
Now.
Thanks.
But let's say you buy a laptop. You get out of the California area so that it's legal for you to drive within the front seat, or the passenger sits in the back seat.
Well, I'm not driving. I'm doing the computer.
Some cell phones allow you to actually use the cell phone as the connection to the Internet, and that's a possibility as well.
Let's hope you have a cell phone that has a very good, consistent reception over an area.
Yeah, and you basically also need T-Mobile. That's the
This is funny. So you leave California, and you can drive with the laptop on your lap in the front seat, and you can see triple trailer semis.
Yeah.
So I don't know. There's something scary there.
Yeah, right.
The roads get more dangerous. Sandra, thank you for the call.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
But that's the only way I could think of to connect with a Mac.
Totally forgot after she hung up.
She probably is listening on air, so go ahead.
Oh, hey. Good. Things like Avant Go could also work. Or items where you can view web pages and then have them saved for offline usage.
Avant Go, I use that every day. It is one of the best pieces of service. It's the best service and piece of software, I think, for handheld PDA. And it's avantgo.com.
This ad brought to you by... Oh, it's free. Okay, well, that's different.
But she wanted to use a Mac.
Yeah, you can use Avant Go with a Mac.
You can use Avant Go with a Mac.
Yeah. Okay.
There's got to be something, though, available for the Mac. It's not a...
It's called Mozilla. You can cache with Mozilla.
Well, it's not a revolutionary technology. It's something that it allows you to simply download.
But that wouldn't be doing live. You wouldn't be able to get your email live, and you wouldn't be able to do real live sites. But you can get a lot of cache stuff. But then you'd have to know where you're going. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. If you have questions or comments, the numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can use the Internet. Visit thegeekspeak.org, the website. Click on The Geeks and click on Send a Message. We'll get that in our email and respond to you at pronto.
This week on This American Life, the FCC says that it's cracking down these days on bad words for two reasons. The words hurt kids, and kids don't know these words. Turns out, best as science can tell, both premises are probably untrue.
As soon as kids learn how to talk, I mean, we've got two-year-olds in our sample saying four-letter words.
Common sense, propriety, and the FCC this week.
Catch This American Life Sunday at 10 a.m. on KUSP.
Okay, I know what I'm doing Sunday at 10 a.m. That sounds like a great subject. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Miles Elam, John Tracy, and Sean Cleveland. This program is supported by a grant from Cruzio, providing internet service including DSL, spam filters, PHP, MySQL. Now with nationwide access, information about Cruzio membership is available online at cruzio.com or by calling 459-6301. We are taking your calls right now. The phone number is 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can go to geekspeak.org with a web browser, click on The Geeks, and click on Send a Message to get in our queue. And what are we answering? We're answering your calls or emails with questions or comments about technology. Not necessarily a computer, but you do know a little bit about computers. You could talk about a Prius. You could talk about cell phones or portable devices. Or, heck, ask me how to buy us a NPN transistor.
Did
your
you
call,
just say heck?
Yeah, heck. You like that word or not? No? Sorry.
It's a four-letter word.
I'm young. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And we're going to go right to Tony in Santa Cruz. Tony, welcome to Geek Speak.
Thank you.
What's your question?
Yeah, I just got my first digital camera. It's a Sony, actually, DSC-W1. It's fairly new on the market. It's got a 2.5-inch LCD screen, so I'm kind of excited about using that.
5 megapixel.
Yeah, five megapixel.
Sean was actually bought a camera a while ago, then tried to return it so he could wait for this camera. So he's jealous already off the bat.
I'm fully jealous.
So
right
go
now.
On. What's your question with the camera?
All right. So I got 5 megapixel with the idea that I can make enlargements on the Mac and then still get high resolution if I want to crop in. But my question is, I'm on the Mac. And the one downside, I think, with this camera is, and from all I've read, I haven't really gotten into it deeply yet, is that the software is not very Mac supportive. So I'm wondering what other shareware, freeware, or other commercial packages...
Are you running OS X?
OS X.
Okay. You don't need to use the software of a camera. Any digital camera you buy, the software that comes with a digital camera, eh. Sometimes they're really nice, sometimes they're not. Nikon, for example, on their high-end cameras, the software is actually very useful because some of the formats are proprietary. But any small camera like that, the media that's being stored on there is going to be a JPEG, maybe a TIFF, but probably a JPEG. And you just open it up in any editor that you have on your machine. Now, since you're running a Mac OS X, you've got iPhoto. And iPhoto can pretty much do what you need it to do. It can rotate, it can crop. You don't want to ever really enlarge a photo. And I can get into more details about that. But in general, you can crop things, you can rotate them, you can change the color balance, you can make them sepia tone or black and white, you can change red eye, you know, fix red eye. You can
mostly with Photoshop?
In iPhoto.
Oh, all in iPhoto.
And iPhoto is part of the OS X, so it's free to you.
Right.
I would go with that if you don't want to spend a lot of money. If you want to spend some money, Photoshop. Sean, you have some input on this?
No.
No? Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you were getting my attention.
One question on Photoshop. On iPhoto, I understand, does it make a copy of every JPEG or every image file you have, sort of duplicate that
its own? Yeah, it's kind of complicated. But basically, if you store your own file formatting of images, you have a whole collection of how you do it, iPhoto is going to do a different way. And if you import those photos into iPhoto, then you're going to have two copies. But the other way to do it is when you plug your camera into your computer or your memory stick, if you have a card reader, a memory stick reader, iPhoto can just load your photos right from the start. Now, John uses iPhoto a lot. I don't. So, John, you want to talk a little bit about iPhoto? Do you like it as a library for photos?
It's really confusing if you need to actually go in and manipulate the files and pull them out themselves. What you need to do is export them from iPhoto. And I know there's some concern about loss of data. I mean, not loss of data, but just loss of image quality doing that. I haven't experienced that, but then I only have a 3.2 megapixel camera. So I don't know if at the higher end, if there really is loss of data doing that or not. Because it takes your pictures and it stores them in this really bizarre way that you can't just browse to them. You have to use iPhoto to get them out. Other than that, yes, I love iPhoto for organizing my photos because it's huge.
Does that Sony have a macro lens?
Yes.
It does. Okay, I'd heard that it didn't.
Macro setting, yeah, to something like 4 inches.
Nice. See?
That's a great camera.
It's a great camera.
The only problem I'd have with the camera is that it's using a Sony memory stick rather than a flash card.
Yeah.
That's the only thing, because I find that Sony memory sticks aren't as reliable as flash cards. I seem to lose more data.
I have compact flash.
Yeah.
I already had a bunch of it, so that was the one drawback.
But Tony, it sounds like you got a great camera. Now, if you want to know what I do, I use Photoshop. And the reason why I'm able to use Photoshop is I work at the university and I get Photoshop on my work computer anyway because I support it. So it's nice and easy. But if you have access to Photoshop or even Photoshop Elements, which is the cheaper version, great editing software, especially if you want to have much more control of the file formats. Remember that every time you resave a JPEG, you lose image quality.
Every time you resave a JPEG, you lose image quality.
Yes.
Oh, because it's compressing it again.
And it's only if you modify it and save it, but basically if you save it.
Even at the highest setting.
And even if you rotate it.
I might go in and just pick out an area that I want to make a 4x6 photo from.
Okay, so what you want to do is don't worry about the size and everything. Who's printing for you?
I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe
so
a suggestion.
You can use a lot of printing bureaus. Any traditional printing place will definitely be able to support digital files at this point. You can burn a CD.
I'd probably go to Bayfoto then.
Okay, great. Bayfoto. So Bayfoto will take your file. Don't change the image size at all. Crop the image the way you want it to look, and then give it to them and tell them what size you want it to print. Because they will reduce the size. And if it needs to be enlarged, they'll enlarge the size, which means you'll lose quality. One thing, though, if you are using Bayfoto, Bayfoto has this Java application that allows you to do a lot of image manipulation and uploading to their site. And I would highly recommend it. It's called the Rose System. It's available from their site for free, and you could also go in any of the stores and talk to them about it real quick, and they might even be able to give it to you on CD or something. But great little thing if you're using iPhoto to print anyway.
How's the battery life on that?
You know, it's too soon to tell.
Okay. Because with the 2.5-inch screen, it's beautiful, but, you know, uses more power.
That's right. It uses more power. It's got two nickel metal hydride AA's.
Oh, really?
Is how it uses it.
And that's nice for the AA's. That means if you're traveling, you can get new batteries.
Yeah, and right, I've got alkalines in there right now.
That camera again is the Sony
DSC-W1.
DSC-W1. Tony, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We have Bruce from Seaside. Welcome to Geek Speak. We don't have Bruce from Seaside, but we do have Bernard from Santa Cruz. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi.
Hi.
I just purchased a new, it's a similar question actually, a Kodak EasyShare camera.
Mm-hmm.
It has a charging and printer dock, and it apparently attaches to the computer via a USB cable.
Okay.
And we have this 6-month-old iMac that just with a 15-inch screen, and it only has 3 little USB ports in the back that are already used up.
It should only have 2 USB ports on the back of it. Does your keyboard have a USB port on it?
Yeah, and one of them apparently goes off to the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, on the sort of on the left and right side of the back.
Uh-huh.
And there's a vacant one. Can you just plug things in there?
You can plug in right there. The only issue is that's a little bit of a lower power USB.
Uh-huh.
But what you can do, I'm assuming you have a USB printer, too, that's what's plugged into the back of the computer?
Yeah, so I think what's using up is a printer, there's
the keyboard,
and there's a gizmo that synchronizes my Palm Pilot.
Uh-huh, okay. So you can probably hook your Palm Pilot synchronization thing into your keyboard.
Oh, okay.
And if not, you can try the printer. So basically just try it and find out which one will work.
Uh-huh.
I would do the printer simply because I hate the idea of risking my syncing of the Palm Pilot. Because, you know, if you have problems in there, you're going to have this data problem. So I'd plug the printer in. The printer definitely has its own power, probably doesn't need to go through the back of the machine, and you're set. Now, if you totally fill up on USB ports, you can get
I understand you to say that, so I would plug the new printer, the Kodak printer, into the back of my existing printer?
No, the keyboard.
Into the keyboard.
Sure.
Oh, okay.
Macs have that extra. Now, you can also go and at your local, you're in Santa Cruz, so Santa Cruz Electronics.
Yeah.
I'm the writer of the show. I might as well mention them. They have these USB hubs, and basically it plugs into one of your ports and gives you like 4 more, and they're under $50. I don't really know what the price are.
$20, $30.
You can just get one of those, and it will work on your Mac as well.
But prior to trying that, I could just try plugging the new Kodak printer, or did you suggest plugging in the Palm Pilot gizmo?
No.
I wouldn't plug the Palm Pilot into the keyboard because it needs more power than that.
Yeah, I would because it might not be powered. I'd go ahead and do the printer. And if you already have a USB printer, do that one, not your new one, because you know it works. And the new one you're kind of testing out. So.
Gotcha.
There you go.
Yeah, okay.
The other thing you can do, and this is really totally valid for USB,
mm-hmm.
whenever you want to print, unplug your Palm Pilot. Just make sure it's not syncing and plug in your printer. You can unplug and plug live whenever you want.
Yeah.
You don't have to be on. Or you don't have to be off. Right.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good idea, too.
Thank you very much for the call, Bernard.
Can I throw in another one, or you have other callers waiting?
Go ahead. We got 3 other callers waiting, but go ahead.
My wife is affiliated with UCSC.
Okay.
And so she gets a lot of email on our... She works partly at home and gets a lot of email at home on this iMac.
Uh-huh.
And UCSC's server has a tremendous amount of spam mail.
Yes.
I would say every day we get 25 spams and 2 or 3 important messages.
Isn't that frustrating?
Yeah. And is there a simple way around this? I know UCSC is working on it. Did you have any ideas?
Well, I do know UCSC is working on it. John Rudd is working on it for UCSC.
Uh-huh.
And there are some filtering that's happening on the server side. She needs to upgrade. She needs to make sure that she's not using the old POP server, but now using Cruise Mail. I feel like I'm at work all of a sudden. And I think it has filters enabled right now, but it definitely tags spam. All messages go through the thing called Spam Assassin.
It does catch 5 or 6 each day, but it leaves about 25 more.
Well, the spam assassin thing is a little loose. It's not being aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make it more aggressive. What I would do is she can call the help line,
uh-huh.
Or if she'd like to call me, I can direct her off to someone else. That's part of my job. So she can give me a ring, and my phone number is 459. I've lost track of my number. Miles? 5215. There you go. 459-5215. She'd like to call me at work to talk about that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's weird. We have Judith from Watsonville. Judith, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi. Yeah, I have two quick questions. One is, what is the update that's needed for the Mac OS X that you were mentioning at the beginning of the show? Browsing.
It's not really important what the update is, but how to get it. If you're on OS 10, you're connected to a network. You go up to the Apple and go down until you see a thing that says Software Update and choose that.
And then
it will be really easy. And if it, I think it's there on all the OS 10s, yeah.
Yes.
And that's it. Just run that, and then if it says you're fully updated, then don't worry about it. If it says you've got to download this lots of data, then do it.
This dialog box shows up that'll have a whole bunch of things for you to download.
It'll check the ones that knows you need.
Yeah, there'll be some that you have to do before you can do this update. You have to have a couple of security updates before you can run this. So if you've never run Software Update, you might have to run it 3 or 4 times and restart your computer each time. You might have to.
Yeah.
Okay. That was the one question. So the other question is, I recently became a great auntie, and I was emailed some baby pictures that are in the JPG format. And I don't know how to open them. I didn't know you could tell me how to do that.
Are you using Mail, the client that comes with OS 10? Is that the email client?
I'm connected with AOL.
Okay. What you want to do is in AOL you should be able to just double click that attachment. But if you download that, if you know how to download that attachment somewhere on your computer and then find it.
I thought I did, but it didn't show it was downloading.
Huh. Well, it's possible that. It's possible that AOL didn't download it. Sometimes AOL's setup is you have to specifically say download attachments. It should be in that message that the attachments came in.
Do you know if AOL has a file size limit, Lyle?
It does, but she shouldn't even see the file if it's over the. Sometimes the files are too big for your server to receive, and so the message will get bounced back. But if you have the message and it says attachments, you want to download those attachments, and once you download them, double clicking them in OS 10 should open them up. And if not, you can open up your web browser and drag that icon onto the web browser screen, and it will open.
Onto the web browser screen.
Yeah. It's a little confusing, but
it's
the best I got for you.
Apple has a built-in application called Preview that automatically should open any JPEG that you get. So if it really is a JPEG...
iPhoto, is that what would open it?
That might open it. That's okay.
iPhoto could, too. It's a more cumbersome way to do it. Usually, if you double-click on a JPEG, it should open up automatically using Preview.
With Preview?
Preview.
Yeah. That's an application in OS X, and it's in your applications folder. It's called Preview.
Okay.
And I would assume that would work no problem. The other thing is you might want to upgrade your AOL client. You might want to do your upgrade on AOL. They give disks to people all the time. If they don't give them to you, then go to your neighbor and steal one and install. It might help you out a little bit.
Upgrade
AOL, because if it's having trouble opening JPEGs, that shouldn't be happening. JPEGs is a great file format for sharing data.
But if I have AOL 9.0, isn't that the latest update, or is there another after that?
Unfortunately, we don't know on OS 10. None of us use AOL. But you know, if you're in the email itself and you see the files and you double click them, they should open. If they're not, then you need to save them to your hard drive somewhere, like your desktop, and then double click them from there, and they definitely should open from there.
Yeah, well, it seems the icon has come onto the desktop, but when I click on it, it just sort of opens. So it says to AOL, and I'm not connected to the.
Okay. So this, when it's on the desktop, what you want to do is go into your applications folder. Do you know where that is? Applications. Open up your hard drive and go to applications.
Okay.
And then in there somewhere is going to be an application called Preview. Double click on that. From Preview, say File Open. And then go to your desktop, and you'll see that JPEG and pick it. I think that's. I've got to go. I've got other people calling.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Judith, for the call.
Bye.
Bruce from Seaside.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Well, great to be back. Great to hear your blend of humor.
I'm glad you're able to recognize us as such.
Well, you know, it's, shall we say, an acquired taste.
What's your question, Bruce?
It's dealing with Samba, and I'm trying to use SWAT, which Samba, as you know, is an acronym. SWAT is an acronym of an acronym. It stands for Samba Web Administration Tool, mm-hmm. and it connects to the Samba machinery through port 901. And when I go there and I try and use it, I get a message that comes back through my browser, which says, could not connect to port 901. And I don't have a firewall installed, but, and I've also done all the other setup in the /etc/samba/smb.conf, and I've done the...
Well, Bruce, I can supply humor to this problem, but I don't know if I can supply an answer. But let's see if Miles can.
I haven't come across this particular problem in SWAT. Then again, I haven't used it that often. But if your browser is saying that it can't connect,
it's an error.
The service hasn't opened up the port.
What could prevent a port from opening up? I'm logged in.
You know, it may be that it can't connect to, that the web administration tool can't connect to Samba. If it finds an error in trying to connect to Samba in the first place, it won't start up.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. In SWAT, you should find a log file and see what the error is that you're running into, Miles.
Yeah, it probably would be in varlog.
Yeah, varlog.
Varlog SWAT.log or varlog SWAT.
And look around for that. And I bet anything it's not starting up for some reason. Right. Hopefully it's something simple.
Yeah, because this is a question. I've gone to linuxquestions.org and mm-hmm. been there for about 3 days. I've gotten a few suggestions, but nobody has anything that actually works.
I bet you that it's just not running. The other thing is you can check to see if the service that SWAT is running after you've started it.
SWAT does not run as a default service.
Oh, it's running as an email. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So
it's supposed to start up with net. By net,
Samba is running. That I know, but SWAT.
It's a question of SWAT actually being able to connect to Samba. The settings are out of sync.
901.
Yeah, have you checked the log files yet?
No, I haven't checked the log files.
Definitely do that because it might just say as clear as clear as day what the actual error is that you're getting, mm-hmm. and then that's the thing you want to post on Linux Questions or call us back with or whatnot. You can always, if you'd like, after you get more information about what the error that you're actually getting on is, go ahead and go to geekspeak.org, click on the geeks, click on Miles, then click on send a message, and you'll be able to help you out. Bruce, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
From Santa Cruz, John, welcome.
Hi, how you doing?
Quite well. What's your question for the day, sir?
My question is about MP3 tagging songs. So you use particular software, like I have a Real Player, and I'll tag a song and I'll make it a genre or rate the song.
Uh-huh.
Does that then translate to the file that's stored on your hard drive, or will you only see your rating when you're using the software to look at the song?
Depends on the software, but there is a protocol for storing that data in the MP3. Miles, you want to talk
rather
about
format. ID3 and ID3 version 2. Those will save the genre, the artists, the song title, and other such information.
John, what application are you using?
The Real Player.
Real Player.
Real One Player.
Uh-huh. And I don't know if I don't know if rating gets stored. I don't think rating does, but maybe it does.
Oh, rating for, like, how good the song is?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, they have, like, 1 through 5.
That's not going to be safe. That's absolutely not
going to be safe. But the genre should. That's a standard thing. Like, whenever I encode the GeekSpeak shows, I label it as speech, and that gets saved with the MP3 file.
And that should be saved on my heart. That should be related
to the file
itself. Okay.
It's called metadata for the file.
Uh-huh.
And pretty
metadata.
Pretty much that stuff should be saved. It's pretty easy to test. Go ahead and, you know, mark up a file a whole bunch and give it to somebody else or open it in some other application and see if you see that data.
Yeah, open it in Winamp.
Yeah.
Winamp is a great player.
Yeah.
It's free.
Does Winamp show you genres?
It shows you everything.
Yeah, it's really quite nice. Winamp, I think it's winamp.com,
yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, any program that reads ID3s, which is all of them at this point, will be able to show you the genre, the title, the artist.
And it's possible that some extra stuff, some extra features that you use aren't being saved to the file because the file format doesn't support it. Like, I don't think rating actually gets saved. And that makes sense because the rating is actually your interaction with that file, not the file itself.
Yeah, that sounds like Real just trying to get information.
Well, you know, iTunes does the same thing.
But an iPod.
Yeah,
you
yes.
may need to adjust the visual display, too, because you're not seeing it doesn't mean that it's not there. You just need to say, you know, show these aspects of the song on the title.
Yeah.
You might need to dig a little deeper and look for that.
Okay. Do you have any suggestions on MP3 players, the ones, you know, 15
Winamp.
Gigs or higher?
Winamp.
excuse me, for handheld
players.
Yeah.
Those iPods are really cute, but they're expensive. You know, for other solutions, Miles got a great little CD player that plays MP3s.
It's kind of cheap. It skips a lot.
Those are kind of nice because you can, you know, organize all your songs on a CD on your computer, then burn a CD, and then take, you know, hours and hours of songs with you on your portable.
Although I do have to say I'm kind of rethinking that. I think it's worth it to get one of those little portable, really small portable MP3
players. But I can tell you,
just connect up to
one of the most crucial things with those things is your battery life. And then the other one is your hard drive. If you've got a hard drive and it's small enough, you're going to have a problem if you drop it. If it's a solid-state device, you're going to have smaller size or much more expensive to get it larger, but you won't have that problem of dropping it and losing the data, though you would might have problems with dropping it and cracking it. So that's some things to look at. But battery life, so important.
Yeah.
And both battery life and then battery duration, how long the battery actually lasts. The early iPods, the battery ended at a certain time, just kind of died, which was really bad, but...
And Nokia just came out with a new GSM cell phone with MP3 playback. A friend of mine just purchased it, and it sounds awesome. And it has upgradable memory.
And you can always get a portable, like a handheld, like a Palm device or something that has a card slot for it. And some of those now are playing MP3s as well. Again, if you'd like to ask about portable devices, our resident geek, Chris, is probably the expert on that.
We'll try and get him back in the next few weeks.
Yeah, and if you'd like to send him a message, you go to geekspeak.org, find Chris's profile, and click send a message on him. Thank you very much for the call.
Great, thanks, bye.
Sounds like we're giving an avalanche of data. It's like, we have this and this, this.
It is an avalanche.
If you didn't catch it, go to geekspeak.org, send us a message, and
we'll help you out. From my... town I live in, Patrick in Felton.
Yes.
Hi. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you. So I'm running System 10, and over the last 6 months, I've had a couple of issues where I will get zeros in all of my data. Not all of it, but lots of them.
What kind of data?
JPEGs, EPSs.
You mean you go to open the file and it says cannot open, and then you look at it and it's just all...
It's zero, right.
Uh-huh.
And I'll have big blocks of them.
Okay, so your files are getting erased, basically.
Exactly.
I would say it's a hard drive problem.
Are you shutting down your system with... are you just turning it off without shutting down? Do you ever do that? Because that can sometimes happen with the file system.
Turning it off without shutting down.
Do you, like, just unplug your computer or turn off really quick? No?
Well, as a matter of fact, I'll have power shortages because I'm up in the Santa Cruz Mountains.
That sounds...
That's the problem.
A UPS will go a long way. An uninterruptible power supply, a battery backup, will go a long way towards alleviating this kind of a problem.
So what's happening is the file system has this, like, header information and the file data. And the header information and the file data are getting misaligned. That's as simple as we can make it, right, in 3 minutes?
Basically... in the past, it used to be that you would lose all the data on your hard drive. Advances through computer science in the industry is now you only lose single files that were open at the time the computer was running.
Right.
But that's basically the case.
Those files are actually still in the hard drive unless you keep on using the hard drive. If you'd be like, oh my gosh, it's zero and it wasn't 5 minutes ago and I need that file, you can actually get that recovered pretty easily. But the more you use the hard drive, the more that will get erased. So, yeah, what you want to do is get a USB, UPS, an uninterruptible
power supply.
Unlike my ability to speak.
They should be required for anybody who lives up in the hills. Lyle and I and Sean also live up in the hills where the power can be low.
I don't live up in the hills and you still need one.
I've got several.
Yeah,
it's a good idea to protect your $1,000 to $3,000 investment.
Yeah. You know what's cool? When the power goes out, your DSL still works. It's coming on your phone line. So I actually have my DSL router
plugged into
and my wireless plugged into, you know, into an uninterruptible power supply, and then so I can surf wirelessly off my notebook.
And Patrick,
in the dark,
I would shoot down to Santa Cruz Electronics, pick this up, but you can pick it up anywhere. You can order them online.
And that's going to last for how long?
It lasts for enough time for you to shut your computer down. It depends on how big one you get.
Exactly.
Right. But in general, they should be used as soon as the power goes out. Basically,
it's mostly to catch flickers. It's not to give you another half an hour to run your computer.
Right.
It's mostly just to catch if the power flickers, or if it goes out, it gives you enough time to save and shut down.
And, you know, like mine, I think I'll last like a half an hour.
Yeah.
Mine lasts about 20 minutes to half an hour.
What you need to do is look at what size monitor you have, how much power that draws, and, you know, like if you have a 21-inch CRT and a G5, you need a pretty beefy UPS.
Yeah, ask a representative because they have charts depending on what kind of computer you have.
You know what, Santa Cruz Electronics, go down. They'll be able to help you out really good
And the avalanche continues.
And one more thing, if you've got a laser printer, anybody have a laser printer
do
and
not
a USB,
connect.
Do not put it on your power supply. Just
it draws 5,000 volts of power. That's way too much for any UPS to handle.
Not volts, but we'll go on. Thank you, Patrick, very much for the call.
Right. Did I say volts?
You did say volts, and I'm not going to correct you because I don't want to.
Out of time.
Gray Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Gray Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. The geeks today were Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and John Tracy. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland. Thank you for your participation in GeekSpeak.
It was good to be here.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And thank you all for listening to GeekSpeak. To those of you that called in, thanks for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without you, it would just be us geeking out. And who really wants to listen to that? This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, Santa Cruz, KDBH, San Arto. We're on the web at kusp.org. Fine Print with Jen Ramage is coming up next, followed by State of the Arts with my mother, Diana Wright Troxel. And at noon, Two Steps in the Blues with Charlie Lang. For KUSP and for GeekSpeak, my name's Lyle Troxel. Stay tuned now for Fine Print.